You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Every Wednesday, as usual, at this time of the day, we have the S&M show. Together with, of course, Khoo Soo Chuang, and today we have Julian Ng and the one and only Salvatore Dali.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Today's show is going to be slightly, well, interesting, because just like what the title of the show is, S&M, today we're going to be talking about the long and short of it.
Sounds bad for the show title S&M.
You tell me. So would you prefer to go long or go short?
You know, when we talk about these kind of things, it always makes my mind go back to 1993. And in those days, it was T+7.
Yeah.
T+7, right? So you could hold a stock contract for essentially nearly 2 weeks, right? Calendar week. Nearly 14 calendar days. It's fantastic, but now it's T+3. So the proposition is, it depends on what kind of mentality of an investor you are. Jules, you are an avowed long-term investor. You hold stocks until perhaps, you know, your grandson's generation.
Or maybe longer, if you could. Grandsons.
And Mr. Dali, he could hold stocks for as long as 3 seconds.
Yes.
So I think it's a matter of the kind of stress levels you you want to go through, because, you know, going to T+7 back in those days was very stressful, even though it was a bull run at the time. So, you know, the market at the time was running on a greater fool theory, right? You want to buy in a T+0 and then hopefully sell it before T+7 at a good profit.
Who's the greater fool? Because if you're buying a stock and it goes $140 and there's buy calls on that stock, right?
Yeah.
Who's going to buy it at $140 and take it higher?
Exactly. But if you calculate returns from 93 till today, right, you would have made extremely decent gains in spite of all the crises that happened since that time. The Asian, the dot-com bust, the global financial crisis. You would have made extremely decent gains.
Go on then, Dali. Yeah, tell us why short is better than long. Because girls don't answer.
I don't think... probably if I was investing 30, 40 years ago, I would still probably think that there's a place for long-term investors. But what is long-term? Long-term is basically you see something that is undervalued and you hope that it eventually reaches what we call fair value. Or you see a company that is kind of like about to dominate a sector or will remain dominant, say like BAT, you know, the Guinness Anchor, the public banks and all that. And you are going to participate in that kind of growth, which will give you like slightly more than, better than economy growth rate and interest rate. You know, if you're chalking up like 8 to 11% a year, you'd be pretty happy as a long-term investor. But I think that the era of being long-term investing is kind of over because of globalization. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, before, say, maybe 30 years ago, you could pick stocks and sectors that are actually insulated. It could be like, say, the companies that I just cited.
The so-called moat stocks like Buffett loves, right?
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, you could be in BAT in Malaysia and be pretty much insulated to whatever is happening globally.
No, I don't disagree that you need to have some form of moat. Moat investing and value investing is also a branch of long-term investment. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the greatest moat investor, which is Warren Buffett, he holds his stocks forever. So it actually doesn't debunk the idea of long-term holdings. But going back to what you said about how globalization actually reduces the need for being long-term, I would disagree with that, because globalization actually increases risk and therefore increases the risk of actually stock picking. So with globalization, what you need is a vehicle to be able to invest in global growth. So if you look at the MSCI indices, right, the MSCI Global Developed Plus Emerging Market Index, it has returned about 8% over the last 10 years or so.
8% a year over the last 10 years. So
Per annum.
Over the last 10 years.
So okay. you have to ask yourself, as a lay investor, if you don't have a job of investing full-time, right?
Okay.
If you don't have time to invest, whether you are satisfied with that or you want to spend on the search cost of looking for a super-duper fund manager to give you a market-beating returns. So, you have to ask yourself
a discussion like this is laden with joinders, right? Because this morning we talked about a stock called DVM, and DVM yesterday went up, what, 7.5%, 50% in one day. So 50% in one day is 4 years' work for the guy who is sitting there getting 8 to 11% a year for the last 4 years,
but
right?
How often can he get that one stock?
So it depends on how much information you know, who you know, how much money you got, and how basically what kind of materials your cojones are made of.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm that person who knows all these people and who can actually pick these stocks every day, I would be very, very happy, but I'm not that person. I'm not that guy.
I guess, first point that I tried to make on globalization, why globalization is not favorable for the long-term investors is that there are crises that happens that is outside of the industry and outside of these so-called black swans that causes sharp falls in your stock anyway, even though your sector or your businesses may not be affected. You know, you can cite any kind of crisis. What I mean by globalization is that, funds that have speculated in certain industries are forced to sell down other good holdings to make up for the run in terms of redemptions. And hence, if you could be in Public Bank or even BAT Malaysia, you'll find similarly your shares would be, whacked off 20% over a sustained period before climbing back to normality. Now, fair enough. The only thing that I have a quibble about long-term investor is that, when there are gaps, when a share moves up 20% and moves down 20%, and if you continue to just hold on because it is a long-term shareholding, I think we are missing out the volatility gain, and which is what, I guess, the stress level which a lot of long-term investors shun.
Well, I mean, you can't know whether the share is going to move up or down, because if you sell... You know all about momentum trading, right? If you sell a share after it's gained 20 or 30%, that share could also gain you another 40, 50%.
Yes.
So when do you decide, at which point do you decide you want to sell down? You know, that sell at that point of a 20, 30% gain could be the wrong decision.
So you're saying that long-term investors are basically maybe people with very weak hearts who cannot...
Yeah, and that's the reason why I side with Julian Jules, right? Because I like to sleep at night. I like to have lower blood pressure.
Yes.
And the eternal question, if you have a good stock and it's gone up 25%, right, and you decide to take that money off the table, where do you put it into next, right? You've got to find another good stock that's going to rise another 25%.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
As opposed to, say, a short-term guy that is,
So you're happy with, say, like 10, 12% a year?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Because you get divs as well.
Saying is the market, even a small market like Malaysia, there are stocks that gain 10, 12% a day.
Yeah.
All right?
If you can get in,
220 days in a bloody year.
Mm-hmm.
And you are happy with...
Blooming.
11, 12%. You're playing a totally different game.
David Chu is smiling sagely like a Cheshire cat, like he knows something that we don't.
Fight.
He wants a fight.
I just want to quote a research, and you can find this research actually online from Vanguard Singapore website. They've done a research evaluating fund managers, and all fund managers would purport to say they can beat the market, right? No fund managers worth his salt out there would say, I'm just here to manage money according to the market, right?
But it's also very bad marketing if you don't say that you can.
Well,
so this what this research says is that 75%
higher
of fund managers do not beat the market.
Never
do not beat the market.
And yet,
and the fund managers that beat the market in the first year, there is a very high chance that over the next 3 to 5 years, they would not remain in the top quartile.
So if you're an investor with some disposable income, do you buy stocks directly or do you buy a fund?
So the whole philosophy of passive investing, which is long-term investment, is passiveness. And with passiveness, you need to buy a diversified portfolio. And your diversity could be in terms of value, as you mentioned, Dali, or it could just be a very lazy portfolio that buys the market. And you got to populate your portfolio with a whole bunch of the kind of style of stocks investing that you believe in.
So, to go aggressive or to go defensive? That's the question right now, whether it's short or long term. We'll be back after this. This is the S&M Show on BFM 89.9.
Busy finding money. BFM 89.9.
This is the S&M Show. Okay.
Who were you whipping? Dali or Jules?
Any one of you.
Anyone who's up for the punishment.
Yeah.
The long or short of it, that's what we're talking about today. And we just heard Jules give a nice little dissertation about going long. Dali, what do you think?
Don't ask women this because they'll always go long.
Yeah, well, you look, if you want a long-term gain of like 10-12%, that is such a no-brainer to me that, you know, I can design a simple five-stock portfolio for you in 5 minutes in Malaysia, and then you can go to bed forever.
For the next year.
No, you can do that.
Well, that'd be no good because you'll never wake up. But, you know, the thing is... it depends, right? Because... If you're able to tell investors you can get any quantum of increase in the space of time, you would be God, right? And who is God?
No, it's kind of market. Look, it's like a game. I guess it's a multiplayer game, if you like computer games.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't play with the number of variables that are in the game, okay, then don't play. Then go and play the kids version.
Okay, so there's a Trivial Pursuit Lite and there's a Trivial Pursuit Genius Edition, right? The Genius Edition, in your perspective, involves a lot of tools and instruments that are not available.
So-called Genius Edition doesn't mean when you're playing, you make money, okay? Right? Right? You are battling against it's a zero sum game, so to speak. So you need to basically be better than a lot of them.
Okay, to me, the layman investor. The only people that make vast amounts of money in a short space of time are those which have access to information and instruments that not many other people have. Inside information, access to vast amounts of funding, for example, even access to the major owners themselves of those companies. And therefore, you are in a much, much better position than the next guy. Otherwise, if you don't have those instruments, don't play the game.
Yep.
Easy as that.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I know. I think that you have to really look at this from the viewpoint of how you sell your investing services to the general public. If you tell them that, trust me, I will pick the stocks for you, the cost of that trust is actually very high. You know, and the cost of going, picking the right, even the right unit trust. If you go in and out of unit trust just to search for the correct unit trust managed by the correct fund manager, it's going to be a highly expensive search cost.
Dali, the reason, you know, the trouble with a market like this is it makes everybody look like, you know, Warren Buffett, right? Because it kind of like flatters everybody's ability. Truth be told, let's call a spade, right? And that, I guess, is the reason why, you know, Public Mutual now with about 55 billion ringgit in AUMs, you know, Huang Investment has just blown past their 20 billion target in way less than 3 years.
M Investment recently interviewed them, over 30 billion.
Over 30 billion. And people are chasing the ideas. People are chasing the market like never before, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's go back to the long and short of it.
Okay.
All right? you cited something that the fund managers... I guess any fund managers, I put that figure at higher than 80%, that they never outperform the benchmarks that they are supposed to be outperforming. Now, the second part of it is that one of the big grabs I have about long-term investment is that Warren Buffett is very good. Very, very good. Now, the third part is that I don't think Warren Buffett or even Ben Graham hides what their premise for investing are. You can buy hundreds of books. These are available to you and me and to all these so-called professional fund managers. And yet, they fail.
What do you mean they fail?
They fail to outperform the benchmark.
Their intention, I'm not sure if you're referring to the books of passive investing, but the intention of passive investing is not to outperform the benchmarks. That is precisely their mantra. They are satisfied with market returns. They think that market returns are good enough to beat inflation and to provide them with
benchmark basically is the market returns level, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just saying that these people, so-called long-term investors, the bulk of them still can't outperform.
No, they don't want to outperform. I'm a long-term investor. I don't want to outperform the market. I'm deciding on what kind of risk I want.
Let me manage your money.
You see that's where that's where
I think I can do that very easily.
That's where the costs go up. The cost of trust actually goes up. Now, if you ask me whether I want to pay for your management compared to the cheap market following ETFs, right? ETFs are very cheap to buy. Yes. You know, the decision is skewed towards the ETF, I think.
Okay, as we draw closer to the end of the show, there's one point I want to make as to the difference between speculative investing and long-term investing, so to speak. There seems to be always a bad slant to the word speculative or short-term trading. And I think that, you know, it's time horizon does not make you smarter or make you a long-term investor. Just for the fact that you're holding something that is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years doesn't make you any better. All right? It is how much you know about the stock, the industry that you the stock is that it's in. Now, you can very well just go and buy based on name, you know, or branding, or I think it's good, or whatever. And but you know nuts about that stock. You are also speculating. You are long term speculating. Whereas I still think that there are groups of people, if you are investing with the time horizon of one day to maybe like, you know, 3 months or less, you know, you could be speculating wisely with a lot of information at your hand. We are just trying to take advantage of what we call the so-called the alpha in the market. You know, because look, there are like tons of stocks that give you 5-10% return a day, you know. Whether the market is up or down and so on and so forth. So there is this gap between like performing and non-performing.
I know, but the lay investor has no time to look for that stock. And that goes back to my question. How do you make the lay investor trust you that you are the guy, right? Because 75% or 80%, as you mentioned, of fund managers underperform the index.
Well, we need the lay investor who don't know anything so that the smarter investors will make money. If everybody is equally as good, there won't be any money to be made.
Well, 80% of the market is
institutionalized. You know, Chia Ching Hai is a Penang-based, Penang-born value investor. He runs Value Partners in Hong Kong, right? Mm. He pointed out exactly this, because the market is made up of many types of people. At the top of the pyramid, the guys who know the most, who have access to the most information and instruments. At the bottom of the pyramid, where the most people are, these are the dumb fellas.
The uncle and the aunties. Yeah, the uncle and aunties. Looking at the board. Okay.
So the money is to be made. It just depends on where in the pyramid you are.
So the exercise becomes, you know, which fund manager can I look for? That's my quest, to look for a good fund manager, right? Yeah. So convince me that you are the one.
I'm not even starting a fund.
No, I'm not referring to you, but right. But the question boils down to, please convince me that you...
Or be the fund manager yourself.
Whether you're a public mutual, Huang, or M-Invest, convince me that you are the one who's going to be market beating, or even Chia Ching Hai, you know?
Well, the long and short of it, the debate continues on and will continue on as both school of thoughts, well, both have their plus and minuses. But we're going to leave you with this song right now. Dali, what's your choice for this week?
The song is called Llorando. That's my expertise in speaking Spanish. It's actually a literal translation from the great Roy Orbison song Crying. And this appeared in Mulholland Drive and the end of Prison Break, the series in season 3. Wonderful. You know, it's a wonderful song.
Sentiment of short-term investing.
it's very much if you're in a bear market and you are singing from the edge of despair, this is the song.
Okay. So Dali has emotions after all.
Dali has?
Emotions after all. It's about to sprout a tear.
And so we leave it with that over there. Don't forget to join us once again next week, same time, for the S&M Show on BFM 89.9. Sentí todo mi dolor, sola y llorando, 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 llorando. No es fácil de entender que al verte yo esté llorando, yo que pensé que te olvidé, pero es verdad, es la verdad,
Que te quiero aún más, mucho más que ayer. Dime tú qué puedo hacer.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.